Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman?
Present.
Howard?
So how are you doing?
Good.
Howard? Tice?
Tice, present.
Egbadjay?
Present.
Bliss?
Present.
Gomez?
Present.
Hassan?
Hassan is present.
Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Herr? Juergens?
Juergens, present.
Olson?
Present.
Barr?
Present.
Ryer?
Present.
And then we'll come back. Her?
Present.
And then I believe Howard just joined us. Howard?
Present.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Next order of business is approval of the minutes from Tuesday, March 2nd. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair. So moved.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? If not, members, unmute yourselves for a voice vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, we have two bills up today. The first one is House File 566, Representative Fisher. I will move that House File 566 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative Fisher, there's an amendment to the bill, the A1. Would you like to move adoption of that amendment before presenting your bill?
Yes, Chair Houseman, I would like to move that. And what it does is it just provides a connection to a definition for what disability is so that there's no doubt when we're talking about disability, what disability means.
The chair moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor of the A1, please, again, we unmute, please. All those in favor of the A1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Fisher, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. Appreciate the opportunity to present House File 566. And I want to thank Representative Johnson and Tice, who have been for their help and support on the bill. This is a bill that was started last year. It was the work of several groups coming together to address the issue around service dogs and housing. There was confusion between landlords is what is an acceptable documentation for a service animal. There's a lot of sites out there, some of them that are more legitimate than others. And then also there was concerns from people who are renting as fees and stuff that was associated with service animals, or sometimes not being able to get housing because of service animals and this confusion. So legal aid, tenants, multi-housing association came together to work on some language to provide clarity for everybody so that we would have clear definitions of what a service animal is, and people who've got service animals would have clear expectations of what they would expect when they are renting housing units. And I have several testifiers with me today to help go over and answer questions.
We first of all have Jeff Corey from Duluth. Welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, first is Ron Elwood testifying.
I'm sorry. Mr. Elwood, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. I think maybe Ms. Stefaniak would have been better to go first because they could explain the bill, but
we can take it in whatever order.
Stefaniak should start, and then I can just say two words after.
And for some reason, I don't have that name either, Stefaniak. Ms. Stefaniak.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leanna Stefaniak, and I'm with At Home Apartments. As Representative Fisher explained, this is a bill that we worked on last year. It was a collaboration of many different stakeholders that sought to seek clarification on what is the proper documentation for a service animal or an emotional support animal as it relates to housing. As you've probably heard over the last several years, this has become an issue in other industries as well. In 2018, the state took an approach to kind of help the grocers get some clarification and guidance as to how to handle emotional support animals in public spaces. And nationally, the airlines have been dealing with this issue as well. The purpose of why I'm in support of this bill is that it provides a clarification for what residents should provide for documentation when they do need an emotional support animal to, you know, aid them in a disability situation. And it provides clarification of what landlords can ask or what they should be looking for. The proposed bill is in complement to some guidelines and suggestions that came out of HUD last January 2020. And it does a job to protect the rights of those who are disabled and do need service animals or emotional support animals to quietly enjoy their homes, and helps curtail what I would call a cottage industry that has popped up that allows people to kind of go and purchase these certifications through some website online. There's many legitimate services, but there's some that are not. And the names of these websites by themselves are questionable. Certapet.com, waggypet.com, where you can go in, answer some pretty vague questions about yourself, pay a 2-for-1 fee, get your airline letter or your housing letter, and be on your way. And that's really an affront to those who really do have a disability and need these accommodations. It puts them in a line of questioning that probably isn't appropriate, but because of these fraudulent letters, it casts a shade of doubt. And so what we're trying to do is fix that on all fronts for both the housing providers and the residents who truly do need it.
Thank you for your testimony. I discovered I had the wrong names for testifiers. So Mr. Elwood, you are next, I believe.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. And I want to really thank Ms. Stefaniak and the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association for inviting me personally and Legal Aid as an organization to work with them on this bill and come to the place where we are today, where we have I think a really, really perfectly balanced piece of legislation that both sort of curbs the abuses that Ms. Stefaniak has identified, which are real, but at the same time preserves and protects the rights of persons with disabilities. Many of you members know, and if you don't, Minnesota Legal Aid also houses the Minnesota Disability Law Center, which is a federally designated entity that protects the rights of persons with disabilities. We're proudly had this designation since its outset in 1975. So we were working with the MHA and Ms. Stefaniak to get here. And I just would say that I would really urge your support for this. And the one thing I think is really important is that the bill provides that legitimate documentation can be verified documentation can be sought, which is certainly reasonable, and it comes from a licensed medical professional that designates the need that the disability is in fact legitimate and that the need for the animal is there. So I think again, with that, I just happy to answer any questions and urge your support for the bill and thank Representative Fisher for authoring it.
Members, do we have questions of either the bill author or our two testifiers? Mr. Worth, do we have any questions?
Madam Chair, I don't see any questions at this time.
Okay, well, wait, just a minute, just in case a hand is going up. If not, Representative Fisher, final comments to the bill.
I once again want to thank my co-authors who have helped me with the bill, Representative Tyson Johnson. Appreciate the work that has been done by all sides to bring this issue before us with great suggestions. And it's a great bill. I ask for everybody's green vote so we can keep going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. The chair renews her motion that House File 566, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Hausman?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Tice?
Tice, aye.
Egg Badger.
Aye.
Bliss.
Aye.
Gomez.
Aye.
Hassan.
Hassan votes aye.
Heinrich.
Aye.
Her.
Aye.
Jurgens.
Jurgens, aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Barr.
Aye.
And Ryer.
Aye.
Madam Chair, that is 13 ayes and zero nays.
There being 13 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred. Thank you, members. We have a second bill, House File 969, Representative Vang. The chair will move that House File 969 to bring it before us. This bill will be laid over. Representative Vang, there are two author's amendments. And one's a DE, so I'm assuming you'd like me to adopt those amendments before presenting the bill. The chair moves the DE1 amendment. You want to speak to the DE1?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have two amendments. One is the A4 amendment, which is the amendment to the DE amendment. The A4 just adds clarifying language, and then the DE amendment takes away any references to the Department of Commerce and its enforcement on collection practices, and creates a new provision for landlord-tenant law on collection practices. So it just puts the bill into the shape that I want.
Okay. The chair will now move the A4 amendment to the DE. Any discussion to the A4? In that case, if you would unmute all those in favor of the A4, please say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and that amendment is adopted. And now we have the DE1 as amended. Any discussion, members, to that one? If not, if you're unmuted, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. So the DE1 as amended is adopted. Now, Representative Vang, the bill is in the shape you intend. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to present today House File 969. This bill came from the experiences I heard from tenants while working as a tenant advocate. I've heard from tenants with a landlord who would come early in the morning yelling from outside of the house to collect rent. I've heard from tenants with a landlord who adjusted their ledger to make it look like the tenant owed money and continued to harass the tenant until payment is made. I've also heard from tenants who had a landlord that would threaten to call the police if rent is not paid. This is why today I brought forward this bill, which prohibits landlords from resorting to abusive practices. This is nothing new or additional. Much of the language of this bill came from what's already in law, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and the state's debt collection law that essentially prohibits parties like collection agencies from using abusive practices when collecting money. Why should we give landlords an exemption from these abusive practices if it's already considered illegal for parties collecting money anyway? I also want to highlight that what this bill does not do is does not suggest that all landlords engage in questionable collection methods. It also does not give individual tenants who are subject to these practices a right to sue. What this bill does is basically states that if the landlord engages in these abusive practices, it's also illegal. I don't have testifiers as this bill entirely came from my very own experiences working as a tenant advocate. However, I do have representatives from the Attorney General's office to help answer any questions as this will fall under their enforcement authority.
We do have one testifier, Kyle Berndt from Malta Housing. If Mr. Berndt is present, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kyle Berndt. I am the Director of Public Policy with the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, known as MHA. MHA represents 1,800 members who own and operate 400,000 housing units in Minnesota. I want to thank Senator Vang for the Delete Everything Amendment that was adopted today. The DE substantially improves the functionality of the proposal. MHA continues to work with our internal stakeholders for their thoughts on the new proposal. We will gauge our members, bring concerns back to the author. We believe the framework of the proposal is reasonable and generally reflects industry best practices, but we may need several small adjustments for clarity and industry comfort. Additionally, we would also like to see an elimination of the immediate effective date. MHA members would appreciate time, opportunity to educate their employees to ensure conformity across our membership to these requirements, just like not that this is anything that we don't do, but something that would be appreciated just so we can ensure that we have an opportunity to train our employees. Again, chair members, we'll continue to process this proposal and we'll continue to work with the author to address our concerns as we hear from owners and operators of rental property. With that, thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
And the bill is being held over. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I just have obviously a few concerns. I'm just really thinking this is probably kind of a not really great time to bring forward some of these things. However, I understand them. But I also would like to hear from, is there anyone here that could tell me, is there anything that is kind of reciprocal for the tenant as well to answer the door, to not use a bad language, that type of thing? I'm thinking probably somebody has some kind of something to go through to say why it's important to basically forge that partnership. I just really look at this as being, okay, I get it. I mean, it's really frustrating to be an owner and then to not be able to get rent is really hard because you can't pay your taxes and such. Plus you can't pay your mortgage. But are we also looking out at, you know, who's got the training to say this is why it's important that you do these types of things, that you answer the door, that you do, you know, make sure that you have a plan of how we're going to pay rent and do things like that. I know from experience, we've always had that attitude of, you know, I might not like it, but tell me what's going on so that we can work through it together. And I'm not seeing anything like that. Mostly it just really saddens me that we have to do this. And I'm sure it saddens everyone because we shouldn't have to. We should be in this together and work through this together. So again, I'm just gonna say thank you. Thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing it forward. But I just wish we would do something that would be kind of like the handbook. And I know that we have to go through training. But do tenants have to go through training as well on some of these things? And it would be really great. And I know that they do have that at HomeLine. But do they do it to this degree? Just a comment, thank you.
Representative Bang, a response to that or from the Attorney General's staff that are here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just say that there is, what I'm trying to understand what you're saying, Representative Tice, is that there should be, that tenants should also get a training on not using these practices too. Is that correct? I think that it's, not necessary to teach someone to be a decent human being. You know, some of the behaviors that what this has specifies that, using profanity, obscene language, threatening or intimidating to collect rent, things like that. You know, if the landlord and the tenant have a good working relationship, we don't hear these types of behaviors. But with the landlord, there's an imbalance of like power right there. When the tenant and the landlord, comes into a contractual relationship with as a landlord and tenant, there is an imbalance of power of where the tenant understands the money is owed and how they are supposed to pay rent. And now with the pandemic, as folks are struggling with the job loss due to no fault of their own, landlords are resorting to these bad behaviors to get rent, and tenants have no other way, no outlet to seek help when they've reached a dead end. And so this just provides a balance of power and also alleviates tensions for the tenant. And like I said, we shouldn't have to train someone to be a decent person, especially when everyone is struggling. Everyone deserves more grace. And that's my response.
Representative Howard has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill forward. Your latest comment kind of highlighted something that I wanted to just raise up, which is that power dynamic difference between a landlord and a tenant. And based on the real stories that you've experienced and worked with, it's clear that this legislation is warranted. And, you know, Representative Tice said it'd be nice if it wasn't, but based on those experiences, it clearly is. And I so thank you for bringing the bill forward. One question I had is, are you aware of data about, you know, some of the calls that you've all been receiving from tenants, especially over the last year during the pandemic? We know that most landlords are good landlords and these aren't the practices, but have you seen an uptick in calls based on some of these practices that your bill is trying to get after amidst the pandemic?
Nothing.
From my work as a tenant advocate over, you know, the last summer and through the special sessions, we definitely have heard an uptick of, you know, problematic issues with the landlord, between the landlord and the tenant. You know, in terms of hardcore numbers, I won't be able to give you that, but I do hear just from anecdotal and the phone calls that I've been having, it's definitely much more intense and troubling. You know, I can also defer this to the Attorney General's office because they also hear a lot from tenants when they have issues with the landlords.
Follow-up, Representative Howard?
No follow-up, Madam Chair. Just thank Representative Vang for bringing this bill forward.
Representative Juergens has a question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, first of all, Representative Vang, thanks for bringing this forward. I can appreciate the you know, the need for this in some occasions, but my question probably for the Attorney General's office, I understand they're on, Madam Chair?
That is my understanding, yes.
Okay. My question is, at what point does the collection of rent debt already fall under the Debt Collection Practices Act? I guess what I'm wondering is if this is even necessary.
Ms. Kelly.
Yes, good morning. My understanding is that the act only applies to third-party debt collectors. So an entity collecting on their own debt, which is the majority of landlords who are collecting rent or collecting on their own debt, are not subject to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act or any other regulation governing their conduct.
Okay.
Is that Durgan's follow-up?
Yeah, that explains it. I wonder if maybe tweaking it from that direction so we don't have two sets of rules. We have one set of rules, perhaps, that landlords would also be bound by this if they're collecting their own debt. That way, we don't have to keep two sets of lists up to date.
Ms. Kelly or Representative Vang, any response to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Juergens, for your question. That was the earlier version of the bill where we referenced the state debt collection law. And, you know, a lot of it, the clauses that were in that section were not applicable to landlords. And so we figured instead of just trying to exempt landlords from these clauses that didn't really matter to them, we decided to just do a delete all amendment. So that has been tried, but it's much more complicated. So that's why we did it, the delete all amendment.
Okay. Ms. Kelly, any further response to that?
I would just add that I think the concept of having a more comprehensive and onerous rules on third-party debt collectors makes sense if you think about it. They're always companies, a lot of employees, they can staff, they can hire counsel to guide them. Whereas landlords, especially mom and pop landlords who own one property or two, I think it's appropriate, if it's okay if I can weigh in on that, I think it's appropriate to not subject them to that full huge body of law regarding third-party debt collectors and this more streamlined, narrow one that's in plain language and is easily understandable appears appropriate for a small landlord who collects their own debt.
Any further comment, Representative Juergens?
No further comments. Thank you both for the answers.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Representative Vang for bringing this bill forward. I appreciate, and especially the Attorney General's testimony or comment most recently, I do appreciate the language in this bill because it is very simplified And I think it really helps kind of lay what the rules are, particularly for, you know, one-off smaller landlords who may not necessarily fully appreciate all the various rules that they may need to adhere to. Similarly, I do understand the comments about, you know, tenants also need to know the same thing, but I think that this actually helps both tenants and landlords to understand what the rules of the game are and also understand how they can interact with each other. So I think this actually provides that groundwork for people who are entering this business for the first or second time or might be novices. And many of these rules are created not because everyone is bad, but really because we really just need to know what happens in the worst case scenario, right? So this is kind of what these types of bills address, that factor. And I believe for most landlords, this actually probably won't affect them because most landlords are probably very decent people. But for those who may not be or may just need additional guidance, I really appreciate you, Representative Yang, for bringing forward this bill.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to point back to the testimony from Mr. Berndt of the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, pointing out that this really is about best practices as it is. It's not about something that pushes landlords to behave in a way that goes above and beyond. It's simply good business practices that they're already endorsing. And so to me, that was a really valuable statement. I understand there's still some nuances to work out. As Representative Fang and Representative Howard have already so ably said, the first thing that struck me was the power differential and how when you're the tenant and you're worried about your ability to pay your rent and any of these things from obscene language, which is unpleasant, but it doesn't threaten your life and livelihood, like going to a debtor's employer, or it isn't deceptive, like holding themselves out to be an attorney. Those things go above and beyond. Those are not things that a tenant would do if they were being an unpleasant individual to their landlord. And I think it's important that we are articulating these and putting them out there to look out for the interests of the tenant. So I appreciate this bill, Representative Fang. Thank you.
Mr. Wirth, did I miss any hands?
Madam Chair, I see no other hands at this time.
Representative Fang, final comments to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, for your time to hear this bill. You know, I just want to reiterate that this bill doesn't suggest that all landlords engage in abusive practices. You know, the stories that I've heard from working with tenants have become much more intense and troubling over the last year with COVID-19. When families have lost their jobs due to no fault of their own and unable to afford rent and food on the table, everyone is struggling under this pandemic and everyone deserves more grace, not intimidation, threats, and harassment, especially within their own home. And so once again, thank you for your support.
Seeing no further, this House File 969 as amended will be laid over, so we won't have to vote at this point. Thank you, members, for the good discussion today. Our next meeting will be on Tuesday, March 9 at 10:30.
Madam Chair, sorry to interrupt. Representative Tice does have her hand up.
Now. Oh, okay. Representative Tice. Sorry, I missed it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to know, going forward, are we going to have any conversations about evictions and what we see as a ramp down for that, how things are going? I haven't heard anything lately, so I'm just wondering if you have.
Yes, there will have to be a hearing specifically on the what we're calling the off-ramp for in the transition. I know there are a number of approaches. People are still having discussions about it. The Senate, I believe, has had a hearing. So it is obviously at some point we'll need to hear it and discuss the various options and come to a decision.
Okay. I just think that it's getting close to a time when we need to make a decision, and I'm hoping that we can figure out what that is so that we can start actually getting out from underneath this. From what I'm hearing from my folks and some of the data that I've been trying to get, we're not seeing as many as we had expected. And so I hope that we can start going forward and seeing where we are at. And I think that's the best way we're going to find out what we're at. I've been talking to a lot of my bankers and such too, and nobody's seen any foreclosures and things like that. That's just been really, I know what a pain that was last time, and I don't want to have to go through some of these things again.
We could do one other step. If you're interested, I could meet separately with each caucus and just have an opportunity to hear opinions and points of view, if that might be something you would appreciate. We could set something like that up.
I think that would be very nice.
Okay. All right. We'll plan to do that. If we can find the complicated scheduling is the issue here. Mr. Wirth, any others?
Madam Chair, nothing else at this time.
So our next meeting will be on Tuesday, March 9 at 10:30 a.m. There being no other business before us, we are adjourned.